Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Dear Mrs. Carr, I have from time to time heard from you through some of our mutual friends from Pasadena who have visited Yosemite. I have not seen a copy of Mr. Muir's book, nor heard before that it was published. If he dedicated it to anyone, it should have been to you, as no one person has given to him the great encouragement and assistance which you have. I have not seen him but once since he was married. He then looked more careworn and not so happy as he used to be when engaged in his excursions within and studies of nature's wonderful works in the Sierra Nevada mountains. From a letter of reply by Galen Clark, December 3rd, 1894, handwritten beneath the letterhead, Yosemite Valley and Mariposa Big Tree Grove, Guardian's Office, Galen Clark, Guardian. Alongside the Seal of Minerva, State of California. Mariposa Grove, the largest stand of sequoias within Yosemite National Park, was maintained as a sacred site by American Indians for more than 3,000 years. That's an educated guess by tribal elders and anthropologists. And coincidentally, the approximate age of some of the grove's most ancient trees, 3,000 years. That's the estimated age of the famed grizzly giant, standing tall at 209 feet. It might be 2,700 years old, and it might be 3,200 years old, no real way to count. As long as it lives, as long as it stands. The British-Canadian conservationist Galen Clark, along with his comrade Milton Mann, are said to be the first Europeans to see the grove, having set out to rediscover it after finding other sequoia giants in the vicinity. Galen Clark became a crucial advocate for the protection of these Sierra treasures. On June 30, 1864, as the war entered its fourth and final bloody year, Abraham Lincoln signed the legislation creating the Yosemite Valley and Mariposa Grove Nature Preserve. The first time in history a federal government protected natural and scenic landscapes for public enjoyment. Galen Clark became the grove's very first ranger, serving as guardian of the Yosemite Grant for a quarter century. Like his friend and fellow Sierra Club charter member John Muir, Clark heralded the spiritual power of Yosemite's ancient forests. For Galen Clark, this land became his home and his calling for the rest of his long life. The power and magnificence of the Yosemite lands inspired Clark to advocate for the protection and preservation of these ancient groves and the geologic wonderland of Yosemite Valley. In the early 21st century, it has become popular to demonize the people of earlier times and to dismiss their life's work. Because such people of previous centuries did not live in exactly the same ways as the computer-dependent inmates of the modern police state. And yet without the Galen Clarks of our past, what remains of the ancient groves would now be gone. Stumps of 100 feet in diameter in weed-choked ravines of pillaged earth. On this radio program, we try not to do that. We don't dismiss the life's work of Minerva Hamilton Hoyt, mother of Joshua Tree National Park and Death Valley National Park and Anza Borrego Desert State Park and even Mexico's first desert national parks. Because she was a rich person from the Deep South in the Jim Crow era. We do not throw John Muir's legacy in the garbage because he did not know 21st century corporate greenwashing names for California Indians. Night has fallen on the desert, and tonight I want to tell you a story from old times. An era that would be unrecognizable to most of us. It was just a half dozen years after the gold rush, when people from around the world were flocking to the mythical land called California. California, a romantic and mysterious name, its etymology still argued. The root has many possible sources, but only two have stood up to the scrutiny of the past century and a half. And both of those derive from literary works. The great Norman French epic Song of Roland from 1,000 years ago. And a Spanish novel first published 514 years ago in the year of 1510. The Adventures of Esplandian. The Song of Roland is a poetic telling of a real battle in the Pyrenees centuries earlier and credited to the Norman poet Turoldus. The adventure novel, the Spanish one, was written by Garcia Rodriguez de Montalvo, who described the island of California like this. Know then that on the right hand of the Andes there is an island called California, very close to the side of the terrestrial paradise. And it was peopled by black women without any man among them, for they lived in the fashion of Amazons. They were of strong and hardy bodies, of ardent courage and great force. Their island was the strongest in all the world, with its steep cliffs and rocky shores. Their weapons and armor were all of gold, and so was the harness of the wild beasts which they tamed and rode. For in the whole island, there was no metal but gold. Khalifa is the Spanish version of Khalifa, the Arabic word. Caliph, ruler of the realm. Khalifia would be, by this logic, the female leader of this island kingdom. The real California, long thought to be an island too, was a new American state when the gold rush hit. Just in time. Galen Clark was a pioneer who first settled in Missouri with his wife and children. But after his wife died young, he found his way to the Sierra. Hoping for gold, he instead found work as a laborer. But when his lungs went bad, he decided to build a log cabin and wait out his fate in the beautiful mountains. Tuberculosis usually meant death in those days before antibiotics. Those days before antibiotics were so common and widely used that our dairy cows are fed chicken excrement as a cheap source of calories and leftover chicken antibiotics.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Anyway, there was Galen Clark, 43 years old, a widower, dead broke and marked for death. As he wrote later, I went to the mountains to take my chances of dying or growing better, which I thought were about even. It turns out he had another 50 years ahead of him, and his life's mission soon became clear. Let's now quote from the National Park Service's biography of Clark. Born in Shipton, Canada East, now Quebec, in 1814, Clark developed a passion for Yosemite when he first visited the area in 1855 as part of a 17-member pioneer tourist party. After suffering a lung hemorrhage and quitting his job as a packer at the Mariposa Ditch Company, he decided to either find a cure or end his days in the mountain air. Settling at the meadowlands of Wawona in 1857, Clark built a log cabin near a river ford and trail that provided access to both the Mariposa Grove of Big Trees and Yosemite Valley. The road from Wawona, an Indian word believed to mean Big Tree, was considered the most scenic since it included the famed view of Old Inspiration Point. Clark's rest stop, soon known as Clark Station, furnished visitors with meals, shelter, and a place to graze their horses. There, Clark engaged his guests on a variety of topics from fauna and flora to American Indian history and geology. Within 5 years, Clark ascended to a critical role in the development of what would eventually become Yosemite National Park. In 1864, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Act of Congress transferring Yosemite Valley and the Mariposa Grove to the state of California as a grant reserved from settlement. Terms of the act required that the state shall accept the grant upon the express conditions that the premises shall be held for public use, resort and recreation, and shall be inalienable for all time. The grant was locally administered by a guardian representing an 8-man board of commissioners. Their first choice for the new position was Galen Clark. Throughout the next 24 years, commissioners came and went, but the popular and effective Clark was retained as guardian. However, as a businessman, he proved less successful. To keep his stage stop at Wawona afloat, he was compelled to borrow money, take out mortgages. Unable to clear the debt, he sold out to the road-building Washburn brothers in 1874. The site was eventually developed into the Wawona Hotel Complex that continues to serve Yosemite visitors today. Despite failing as a businessman, Clark never lost his reputation for hospitality and generosity to weary travelers. Quote, he kindly furnished us with flour and a little sugar and tea, and my companion, who complained of the benumbing poverty of a strictly vegetarian diet, gladly accepted Mr. Clark's offer of a piece of bear that had just been killed. John Muir wrote that in The Yosemite. On Muir's very first visit to Yosemite, he met Clark at Wawona. Over the years, the two outdoorsmen made many wilderness sojourns together, in which Clark scrambled through thick chaparral in the easiest way. Deemed the best mountaineer that Muir ever met, Clark sought few comforts when outdoors. He was even careless about selecting a bed for the night. Wrote Muir, he would lie down anywhere on any ground, rough or smooth, without taking pains even to remove cobbles or sharp-angled rocks protruding through the grass or gravel. Clark accompanied Ralph Waldo Emerson, along with Muir, during the Great Transcendentalist's 1871 visit to the Mariposa Grove. Clark proudly pointed out a lower branch on the grizzly giant sequoia that was 6 feet, 7 inches in diameter. As big as the base of any tree trunk Emerson might have seen in New England. In 1880, changes in state politics temporarily ended Clark's guardianship. A new state constitution brought in a new board of commissioners who promptly replaced him with James Hutchings. After 9 tumultuous years and 3 guardian failures, 75-year-old Clark was reappointed to his old post in 1889. Finally, in 1897, conceding that a younger man was needed for the job, he officially retired. But even in retirement, Clark kept busy in Yosemite working as a tourist camp manager and guide. On March 24, 1910, a few days before his 96th birthday, Clark died at his daughter's home in Oakland, California. Decades earlier, he had chosen his final resting place not far from Yosemite Falls. He had dug his own grave, planted seedlings from the Mariposa Grove sequoias, and selected a granite marker. Today, visitors can stand at Galen Clark's gravesite in the Valley Cemetery and marvel at the growth of those sequoias amidst the expanse of his conservation efforts. That same National Park Service page has links to 3 of Galen Clark's books on Yosemite, all on the American Library's Internet Archive. And I'll link that on the Desert Oracle Radio blog, or you can look it up later. NPS.gov, Galen Clark. I want to say hello and thanks to Patty in Silver City. She was kind enough to send a nice note and a check to help support the operation out here, such as it is. And I'm so far behind in reading and even opening the good mail that it took me a couple of months to see her letter and cash the check. How many stacks of evil and worthless mail must a person deal with in this life? I've got the bills due stack, the tax notices that never make much sense, so I just do whatever it says. The various things I have to fight, such as bills from crooked doctors and crooked insurance companies. And the sequoia-sized stacks of junk mail full of every personal detail and business detail. And all of that must be taken to the copy shop and shredded, a service for which I am charged by the pound. And happier news. We are listening to new soundscapes composed and performed by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Tell you something that not a lot of people know, so don't let it get around outside the circle, you know. It has been my intention for the past decade and a half or so to remove myself from the busy work, always online, never-ending crisis of modern life. To live out the remaining time I'm allotted in the wilderness. Night and day, week in and week out. Doing work that satisfies my soul and does some good. And as Ringo Starr sang, it don't come easy. Yeah, I know George Harrison wrote the song. Desert Oracle was conceived to be entirely within the wilderness realm. A decade ago, I was led to a forest of centuries-old pinyon pines at the northern prominence of a relatively small mountain range, nestled between the immense White Mountains and Sierra Nevada. Led by what? By whom? It's not important to attach a name to such forces. They are real enough. I have never needed to convince myself of the power of a primal forest, of a dramatic outcropping of granite, of the soul within a mountain lion. In the wild places, it's easy to talk to the gods. It comes easy. Sometimes out loud, sometimes in song and verse, but more often, I listen for them. They are in the breeze, rustling through the branches, the cheerful chattering of the pinyon jays, the beautiful song of the coyote at just the right moment. The Santa Minerva Sacred Grove is a real place, and this summer I'm going to do some campfire stories there and introduce some of you to this place that will be preserved as not just a nature refuge or a place for human enjoyment, but as a sacred grove in the ancient and modern sense. After all, there are plenty of places for rock climbing, for rock mining, for hunting and fishing, for human recreation, for turning the centuries-old trees into biofuel or toilet paper. A sacred grove is not such a place. As it says on the Santa Minerva website, and by the way, that just means sacred wisdom, holy wisdom, etc. Sacred groves and forests are protected for their spiritual and ecological importance. Such groves are found today throughout India, home of more than a million holy forests. Japan, many thousands of guardian forests surrounding Shinto temples. And Ethiopia, 35,000 primal forests circling Ethiopian Orthodox churches. Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia protect and revere the last of the pre-Christian sacred forests of the Baltic region. And Nigeria, Poland, Ghana, Turkey, Syria, Italy, Australia, Guyana, and Nepal are some of the modern-day nations where people have also preserved some of their ancient sacred landscapes. Sacred groves protect many rare, threatened, and endemic species of plants and animals, and are often the last stand of ancient forest in a community or bioregion. Biodiversity thrives within these sanctified nature preserves, while festivals dating back to antiquity and beyond provide people with a deep and lasting connection to their culture, religious practices, folklore, and history. Sacred groves turn up wherever you look for them. The Old Testament is full of such natural shrines and holy mountains. All of the religions of Abraham began with his pilgrimage to the famed Oracle Oak, the Oak of Moreh in Canaan. Moreh means teacher, oracle. A word left untranslated in our modern Bibles. The Buddha was born in a sacred grove, the sacred grove of Lumbini, 2,600 years ago. Excavations at the site in 2013 revealed a timber structure that, quote, appears to be an ancient tree shrine. Speak of such things again, along with our usual ghost stories and historical tales and strange folklore. All these deep veins of meaning within the land we love. Love it or leave it. Leave it to the developers and resource pillagers. In the weeks to come, I'll let you know more about the summer campfire sessions when the weather up there is like springtime in the Mojave, just beautiful. The last weekend of July, when plenty of you will be up there already in the earthly paradise, the heart of the breathtakingly beautiful Eastern Sierra, the Owens River, Mono Lake, the John Muir and Ansel Adams Wilderness, Tuolumne Meadows, Bishop and Lee Vining, the Holy Land. I want you to visit the Sacred Grove. I want you to think about having such places in your life. I want you to come to our summer campfire stories and seasonal festivals and consult the real oracle of the Whispering Pines. It has never failed me so far. I'm still wound up from being there in January. So I'll leave you with this tonight. A radically different bottom-up conservation strategy is gaining ground worldwide. About 40% of the Earth's wildlife-rich forests are still defended by the local groups who live in and around them. Empowering such ecosystem people, who live close to nature and can directly observe and appreciate the manifold benefits it confers, could be the most effective way to protect what remains of the planet's biodiversity. That's from an article by the biologist Madhav Godgil in Scientific American. Sacred Forest in Scientific American. Good night from the voice of the desert.